The following podcast is a part of the Spin Studio Network. Hello, Sunshine, and welcome to She Was a Fire. It's time to stop dancing in the dark. Let's start your fire and ignite your spark. I'm Courtney Mangan, and welcome to episode 2 of season 2, which is a Ask Me Anything Q&A today. So I'm just going to be answering all the questions that you guys threw at me over the last couple of weeks, and it's really like a mixed bag. So some are about work, some are about health, some are about mindset stuff, some are just about my favorite things. So it's going to be a whole different mix of questions that I haven't really answered much before. Some of them I have a little bit, but I'll go into a little bit more in depth. Before we get started, as always, it would be amazing if you could share this podcast, subscribe, rate, and review. All right, let's chat about what I've been getting up to. So I'm recording this on the 21st, and yesterday, early hours of this morning, we saw the new president get sworn in, got a bit of Biden action in there. And of course, we've got our very first female vice president, first black vice president, first Asian American vice president. So very exciting today to see all of that. And obviously I'm Australian, so it doesn't have the same impact on Australians as it does in Americans. But, you know, America, what they do can impact the whole world. And regardless, it doesn't matter where you're from. It's amazing still to see people of diversity, different ethnicities, people of different genders actually getting jobs in high places. And, you know, it's amazing. So very exciting to see that happening, and like little girls everywhere seeing someone that they can look up to now and see that, you know, it is the top job that women can reach for, you know. And sometimes it is hard when people say like women can do anything, but then you haven't ever seen women in those roles. It can be difficult to convince little girls that they can do anything when no one has done that before that's a female. So it's so exciting to see that we're breaking those barriers. Another exciting thing that's happening is tonight is the Happy Hour live show. So you guys know I'm the producer of the Wild Ones podcast, and tonight we are doing a live show at the casino, live podcast. I'm so excited. It's going to be absolutely epic. Obviously, I'll recap it in another episode once I've actually seen it, but it's like I'm actually just so excited. By the time this airs, you will know the surprise guest, which is the Veronicas, who are going to be surprising the audience with a performance of Untouched. And I'm just like, when the Wild Ones told me, Lucy and Nikki, how they were going to sort of reveal the Veronicas, I got goosebumps. Like, I think I'm actually going to cry. I've talked about this podcast before that I cry from joy and not from sadness. And I feel like tonight I'll be like, oh my God, it's so exciting. Everyone will be so happy and excited to see it. And it's a really big deal for Lucy and Nikki to have someone like that at their show, and then also for, you know, the Spin Studio Network, for our business, to have the level of like that of the Veronicas to be associated with our business, which is really amazing. So that's exciting. Also this week on Instagram, I started a new segment called Courts a la Carte. So last year when I started doing all those different dinners with my staff for Christmas, where we'd take them all out one-on-one with their partner and go to the restaurant of their choosing, I had lots of messages from you guys saying that you'd like to hear about the restaurant, like what I thought of it, what I had, like a mini review. It was just too chaotic last year for me to do that. So I thought maybe this year I could start to do that more for new restaurants and old restaurants that I've been to, and give you guys like price range, vibe check, like what the food's like, all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to be sharing that more. I've done 2 so far this week. I went to Etsu and then I went to Donna Chang in Brisbane. So I shared that on my Instagram. So check that out. And I'll also put it in a highlight on my Instagram page as well. The other thing that's happening is I have immunotherapy tomorrow, and I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty scared about it. I'm down to 2 sessions left to go, but I've been getting side effects. They're rapidly increasing the more treatments that I get, and I'm just like, hold on, body. So I can't lie, I'm pretty scared about tomorrow's treatment for what are the repercussions going to be come, you know, Monday. Am I going to have more mouth sores? Am I going to have a face rash? Will I be growing a third arm? I don't know. But there's like all these little things that, you know, in isolation, you know, just like a rash on your face is not really the end of the world, or like a little sore on your mouth. But it's like when you get all these things, it's all just starting to add up. It's been a year of like, you know, bad memory, me feeling really tired, all these little sores, and it's just the little things that all start to add up. And I just feel like I'm so close to the end. I'm like please just hold on, body. You've only got two more goes. Hold on. So hopefully I don't have anything to report in my next podcast that I have any weird side effects, but I'm a little bit worried about it. I'm not going to lie. But anyway, let's get into it. That's pretty much all I've been up to. It's just been working back at work, getting into it pretty much, and a bunch of stuff I can't share yet because it's just behind the scenes stuff of our businesses. All right, into today's Firestarter. And because the Veronicas, I'm so excited about the Veronicas today, we're just going with a banger, straight up banger, the Veronicas Untouched. And just like a real Aussie classic, the moment that you hear the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, oh my God, just such a great moment in just like, you know, our memories as a teenager. You know what I mean? Was I even a teenager when that came out? Probably not. I was in my early 20s. But you know what I'm saying. It's a great song. It's a banger. And it needs to be in the Firestarter playlist, which, of course, you can check out through the link in the show notes, or you can just head over to Spotify and type my name in and it will come up. All right, let's ignite today's topic. Ask me anything Q&A. So we're just going for no order here. And we're just going to get into it. All right, first question comes from Helen, and she is writing, will I write a productivity hacks book? I mean, no, that's not really on the list of things that I'm planning to do. But if someone came to me and asked me to write a book, like a publisher, of course I would jump at that opportunity. How cool would it be to be like a published author? That would be amazing. I would definitely write a book if somebody was offering it, but it's not really something that I guess I'm striving towards. I have a lot of other plans that I'm trying to do at the moment. Book is not one of them at the present time. All right, next up from Kat, can you tell us more about your diagnosis and experience with endometriosis? This is a pretty short story because for those of you who don't know a lot about endometriosis, which is like me, you have to actually have the surgery or the procedure for in order for them to actually tell if you have endometriosis. There's like a whole bunch of symptoms, and then they can do some scans and they can tell you to the best of their ability that they feel as though you do have endometriosis, but they never know 100% until you've had the actual procedure. And I haven't had that. So it's just doctors saying like, yeah, you've got endometriosis, but we need to actually do that final tick box. It's not that bad for me. I'm on the pill, so I'm able to manage my period pain through that. It has just been like so many other medical things for me over the last few years that my endometriosis hasn't been debilitating like it is for a lot of women, thankfully. I do also have quite a high pain threshold for any kind of pain in the stomach area or the lower abdomen area, just because I've lived my life with irritable bowel syndrome. That means that I have quite a high pain threshold specifically for that area. So, you know, I'm able to tolerate my endometriosis pain a lot better than maybe somebody else who isn't used to their entire life having like I would say I get my IBS pain several times throughout a day. So I get serious cramping regularly. And that was kind of how it went undiagnosed because I had irritable bowel syndrome, and this is apparently quite common. Sometimes you can have both and not even know it. And because I always just thought that my period, that time of my cycle, would actually trigger more irritable bowel syndrome, I always just thought that when I had my periods, it was just hectic IBS, but it was actually IBS in conjunction with endometriosis most likely. So I don't have a lot to share on that. I was diagnosed several years ago. I think I was about 28, maybe 29. And basically I had said I just had a pap smear from the doctors. It was a nurse. And I then went straight into an appointment with my doctor after the pap smear. And I was just kind of like in a lot of pain from it. And she was like, are you okay? And I was like, oh, that pap smear just gave me like really bad period pain. And often, I don't know how, but it triggers my period when I get a pap smear, which is now actually called a cervical screening test, not a pap smear. Back then it was called that when I'm telling this story from several years ago. But now that's what you call them. So the doctor was like, oh, what do you mean like really bad period pain? I was like, oh, I obviously, you know, I get bad period pain. And she just said to me, well, that's actually not normal, which I didn't know. And I think a lot of women think that bad period pain is just normal. And I'd really like to get someone on like a women's doctor or something to talk about that side of things in the future because I'm not very well educated on it. But she was like, let's like look into that a bit further. And that's kind of how I found out that I had endometriosis, and the IBS was kind of like masking it, I guess, or like I just, it's all pain in the gut area and you just don't really know the difference, I suppose. So yeah, that's basically that. I don't share much about it because I'm not super educated on it. I've had like so many other medical issues that have just been at the forefront of what I've been doing. And there are some women who have like, you know, they have to go to hospital. They're in so much pain, they can't move. I'm able, thankfully, to tolerate it because my pain isn't that extreme. And I am kind of used to gut pain, just living my life with that sort of pain generally. So, you know, I haven't really shared it because my experience isn't typical, I would say. And I haven't had the procedure to say that it's exactly what I have. All right, next up, we've got one from Emma. I'd love to know more about your life post-surgery and how you've managed. You look amazing. Oh, thank you, Emma. I guess I feel very normal now. Like it probably took like a year and a half for me to feel kind of myself again with regards to eating and not being as triggered by food, I guess. I've really figured out how much I can eat, what my limits are, foods that are just like going to make me feel sick, when I can drink, when I can't drink in combination with eating, the things I shouldn't have. You know, like I've had a carbonated drink, I think a couple of sips from like a soda maybe twice or three times in the last year and a half, and it just didn't sit well on my stomach. So I've learned to not do that. I know that tap water doesn't sit well on my stomach, so now I ask for bottled still water all the time. So it's just like those little things, and it's like, you know, I'll try and share entrees with friends rather than getting my own entree all the time because I know I can't ever finish it. And it does vary. Like I had someone ask me last night, how much did you eat of your meal? Because I'm doing these restaurant reviews, and I had a pizza, and I said I had two pieces of pizza without the crust because it was like an Italian pizza, so it was a very thick, doughy crust. On the end, and whereas the rest of the pizza was very thin, and I had a slice of garlic bread where I just had like kind of the insides, the garlicky bit, and I had a cocktail. So that's kind of what it is. Every day can be a little bit different. Some days I can eat like I feel like I'm back to normal again, and other days it's like quite restricted. It's just you just got to sort of eat a bit slower than you normally do because you quite don't really know you're full until it's too late with this surgery. And so for anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, you need to go back and listen to episode 4 or 5 where I talk about getting weight loss surgery. And so, yeah, I think that there are different types of surgeries you can have. Some are more restricted than others. I definitely think I may have stretched my stomach a little bit because you're not supposed to drink water and eat at the same time, but I have just struggled to do that. And so I think I've stretched my stomach a little bit so I can eat a little bit more than the normal person who's had this surgery does, but I'm okay with it because it's taught me to eat better quantities. It's taught me to like different foods again. I eat a very different diet than what I used to, and I actually enjoy healthy foods a lot more than I used to. And now it's just more like I can't overeat is the thing. I can still eat similar-ish amounts to you. I probably eat 2/3 of what you eat, but I can't then overeat. And that's probably the best part of it, that it restricts me from being able to overeat. And that was like a real problem to me. It's like I'd always finish everything on my plate and then I'd be going for seconds just because I like the taste of it. Whereas now it's like I can't actually do that because it will make me sick. So yeah, I'm feeling like a lot more comfortable in it now. Every day is always going to be, I have to consider everything I put in my mouth and, you know, think about how much I'm eating, how much I'm drinking at the same time, all of that. However, it's become a lot more part of my life now. It feels a lot more normal rather than something that it's become very like natural for me to consider rather than like an effort like it was at the start. We've got someone, PQ Sayers, has asked me my favorite subject in high school. In high school for like year 11 and 12, I did drama, I did chemistry, maths, English, legal studies, and modern history. The subjects I did, I think. Wow, I'm old now. I graduated in 2003, so that was a long time ago for me to try and remember this. And I would say my favorite subject was probably English or legal studies. I wanted to be a lawyer at one point, so that really interested me. But then when I went to a court case and realized it wasn't like the TV shows in America, I was kind of off it. But I've always been really interested in the law. So I would say that legal studies is probably my favorite subject in school. All right, next up, Rosalie has asked, how do you choose podcasts? And I'm not sure if that is like a business question or if it's like a personal question. So I'll answer both. Personally, it depends on the mood that I'm in or what I'm trying to educate myself on. So at the minute, I've really wanted to listen to crime podcasts, and Wondery has a new one out. So I've listened to a couple of those lately, just in like a true crime mood, I guess. And often what I'll do is I'll type in the top podcast charts and I'll go to the American charts and the Australian charts and have a look at what is trending, the most popular ones are, and that's how I'll choose my true crime podcasts. Usually whatever's like in the top 10 in America or Australia, that's what I'll listen to. And then if I want something business-wise, if there's someone that I like, so for instance, I like hearing from Jeff Bezos. That's just like a random name I've picked out. I don't necessarily like listening to him, but that's just something I've thought of. I would type into the app Jeff Bezos and then see what comes up. And it'll be like all the different podcasts he's appeared on. And because he's like a business person, a lot of different podcasts that, you know, are good enough one to get someone like Jeff Bezos on there. And then they're also going to be business-minded kind of podcasts. So that's kind of how I will find new things. I will type in a guess the like their vibe of. That's usually what I do. Or it's just like recommendations or other people are doing it. See, I've seen someone else recommend it on Instagram, or I'll type in topics and I could type in like, email marketing and just see what comes up. Or I might type in like best podcasts for small business into Google and see what comes up. I just kind of do research to find them. Or often ones I listen to will have someone else on that also has a podcast. And if I liked their chat, I'll go listen to that podcast as well. That's how I find my podcast, and just depends on the mood that I'm in. How do we find podcasts for the Spin Studio Network? We do focus more on influencers just because there's a built-in audience there already. It is very difficult to grow a podcast from scratch. So influencers or people with a profile who already have that way to market their podcast is a lot easier. So that's what we look for. And we look for people that, one, have a dedicated following, people that have like female listeners, if they are females themselves, and people that just have an interesting story that can talk, that talk a lot to their camera on Insta story. So I used to follow the Wild Ones for years. And then when we started the Spin Studio Network, I said to Sam, there are these girls, they're pretty crazy, but they're so engaged on their Insta stories. And I feel like they have a bit of a cult following. They don't have the biggest following in the world. You know, at that point we were talking to the Hembros, who obviously have a very large following, and Emily Sky, who has a very large following. And I said, look, these girls, you know, they still have a great following. It's large compared to all of us, obviously, but it's not as big as Tammy Hembro. But I think that their content would be awesome. And then, you know, that's obviously become it's a life of its own now. It hit number one in the first week, and now they're having a live show. They have over 3 million downloads. They're on the way to 4 million downloads, very close to that. You know, so that was a success. I'm so excited because it was like a real risk that I put myself out there to Sam, being like, I think these girls would be good. So I'm glad to see that that paid off, and they've been amazing. And so it just basically is like what I think I would like to listen to on a podcast, or just making sure that they have something to say that's worthwhile. And we are looking at some really exciting podcasts coming up this year as well to join the network. And it's also about managing our time. We could go out and get a million different influencer podcasts, but we just don't have time to be able to do all of them. So we try and be more picky with the ones that we do work with. All right, next question comes from Kay. If you weren't in PR, what profession could you see yourself in? Well, advertising was something I always wanted to do after the law dream died. Advertising from the movie What Women Want really impacted me, and I've always wanted to be in advertising. Even when we get to do those kinds of campaigns here, I just love that creative side of like coming up with ideas, like catchy taglines and slogans and all that kind of stuff, marketing as a whole. So I think that I would still be in something similar to this, but yeah, maybe not exactly like this, I guess. It wouldn't be like I'd be doing something completely different. It would be, or maybe if we went down a different track, I was a really good golfer. If I didn't go to university, maybe I would have pursued golf, and maybe I'd be a professional golfer. Who knows? Although with my melanoma, that probably would have been a very bad idea. All right, next question comes from Ellie. So do you ever struggle being older than Sam but kind of living in his shadow? I admire you both. This is a really interesting one that I feel like I could easily get offended by, but I won't, because I have said on this podcast before that I have felt like I live in Sam's shadow. So I think this person must be a listener of the podcast and not just someone randomly who's just making an assessment of our relationship. But I set it up that way. I wasn't confident in who I was as a person, in my appearance many years ago, and we set this business up in a way that I was at the office and Sam was out and he was the forward-facing person for this business. If we ever speak about Spin & Co., they say Sam Mangan. A lot of people don't even know who I am. It's only in the past year and a bit that I've started to show my face on Instagram and really try to put myself forward, and that was a personal choice for me. I finally now have the confidence in who I am to do that, and I don't have any issues with Sam being the person at the front, because that's who, that was our decision, you know. And Sam also has that personality that people just gravitate towards, regardless of whether we had chosen for Sam to be at the front. His skill set, his knowledge, his presence would have put him overshadowing me regardless, because when we walk into a room, Sam fills the space and I just don't do that. I have to work on being a good networker and building those individual relationships, whereas Sam can connect with people instantly. He's so charismatic and can tell amazing stories, and he just, anytime you go to dinner with him or you're at any event with him, everything kind of revolves around him just naturally. He's not trying to do that. It just is that, like, people gravitate towards him. He has this energy. So regardless would have been like that, but it's been that way my whole life. I'm a little bit more like withdrawn with people at parties and stuff. Like, I'll go and sit more one-on-one with people and have a chat, rather than he'll be like at the center with playing the music and talking to the crowds kind of thing. And that's just our different vibes. I am not that way inclined. So it doesn't offend me, or it's not a struggle for me, because that's just our different personalities. It's not as though Sam's trying to like dim my light or anything and put me in the shadows. So I'm fine with that. But now that I am more confident, I do want to stand alone a little bit more and know that, like, I am part of this business and people can associate the Spin & Co. and Spin Studio Network with me as much as they do with Sam. And that's nothing that he has to do. That's on me to try and like put myself out there more. So yeah, that's kind of what I guess it is. And I don't really think anything to do with age has to do with it. If you struggle with someone, if you struggle with living in someone's shadow, whether you're younger or older, you're still going to struggle with it. Whether I was his younger sister or older sister, it would just be how it is now. Like, I'm fine with it, and I just need to put myself more out of the shadows if that's where I want to be. I kind of control that, not necessarily that Sam's put me there or anything. I put myself there and now I'm trying to come out. All right, next up, Maddie. Bit random, but do you have a dress code for work, or can you wear whatever you want? Well, like, I own the business, so of course I can wear whatever I want. If I came in like a crop top and like tights or something, Sam would probably be like, what the fuck are you wearing? But aside from that, not really. Like, I can wear whatever I want. With the staff, we ask them to be presentable. And I think now, because fashion is kind of changing, and even when you look at someone like Steve Jobs, when he was one of the most successful businessmen in the world, and he was just wearing like a, you know, no collar top and jeans, even Mark Zuckerberg, like, they're super casual now. I think that the way that the world is moving is changing, and we just try to be like, we don't have any hats on in the office, because Aaron used to wear a backwards cap all the time. So we made a rule that there were no caps in the office. Obviously we need people to be appropriate. We don't like, necessarily like midriffs hanging out for the boys or the girls. We don't want anything that's like everyone's bras are showing, or, you know, the guys have their pants too low, that their underwear showing, anything like that. Nobody does that though. We definitely have like a more casual, chic, modern office vibe than everybody does, like, with a very corporate feel. I mean, Sam wears pretty much jeans every single day as well, but with a button through shirt. So we don't really have any dress code, but yeah, I guess we all just, it does lead from the top. So if I started coming in athleisure wear every day, then the staff probably would feel more comfortable to do that. So I guess they just see what I wear and then kind of like, you know, replicate that level of vibe, I guess. The next one from Kath. What's the best and worst thing about having a public platform? The best thing, I wouldn't say it's really a public platform, but, you know, the best thing I would say is that I get to spread awareness and that I get to help people feel good about themselves and give recommendations so that people are watching good TV shows, spread awareness about skin cancer, just spreading that message. That's the best part. The worst part, I would say, is it does leave you open to people giving you feedback that you might not want or ask for, or tell you what they think you should do, which is hard sometimes. You know, I had someone slide into my DMs the other day saying like, oh, I'd love to see this content from you if it's not like this, that, and the other. And it was a little bit, it's hard for me to be like, well, actually, you don't pay me for my services, so I can do whatever I want on my own platform. But it's like, it's not coming from a bad place. I know that. And they're just trying to give me feedback. And I do ask for feedback. So you do leave yourself open to that. I just find it interesting sometimes that people will slide into your DMs. Like I'm obviously doing like an outfit of the day that I wear, and I will get people to slide into my DMs and be like, oh, that would have looked better with this kind of a top, telling me like what I should wear and giving me feedback on my outfit, which I find to be like insane. I would never slide into someone's DMs and tell them they should wear something different, but they're not trying to be offensive. They just feel like they're doing me a kindness by giving me, you know, this constructive criticism. And so I just need to take it like that and not be offended. But of course it is hard to, you know, I'll get 10 messages, someone being like, oh my God, this outfit looks so cute on you. And then one person be like, oh, it would be better if you'd gotten a pleated skirt rather than a, you know, A-line skirt. And I'd be like, oh, okay. And then that's what I'll think about. You know what I mean? I'll be like, do I need to get an A-line skirt? You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. But yeah, it does leave you open, but that's the give and take that you've got to do for me to be able to spread awareness and, you know, make people feel better about themselves through my content or give people value. I'm going to have those, you know, Karens slide into my DMs or Cheryls, as Sam would say. Next up, we have Talia. Do you ever feel overwhelmed with the amount of constant there is to consume? I think she means content that you have to consume. Definitely. I subscribe to so many podcasts and there's no way, even on double speed, that I can keep up with them all. And so I just try to pick and choose episodes that I actually am interested in the topic rather than feeling obligated to listen to every single episode. And yeah, I do get overwhelmed at work as well with how much I do need to get through, but it's always just about small steps every day. You just got to get started, I guess. And then I don't put too much pressure on myself. Like at the end of the day, I don't have to listen to all of these podcasts every day. I do it because I want to. And I, you know, I take all these extra courses because I want to, and I do feel a sense of urgency to get through them. But sometimes I just check myself and be like, if you don't do that course today, what difference does it make? If you don't listen to that one podcast today, will it really change my life? No. So just chill out and do it tomorrow. It's not the end of the world. All right. Next up, Krista has asked, how far are you from your goal weight, and are you, is it still going well for you? I'm stabilized now. So I'm pretty much at like between 63 and 65 kilos, and that's where I will just stay. The only way for me to lose more weight now will be for me to go to the gym and fully try and work that off. And I'm not sure I necessarily want to do that, to be honest. I would like to just go to the gym to become healthier, but in a way where it's like maybe I might tone things up a little bit. I don't necessarily want to lose my weight. I am very weak. I would like to be a little bit stronger. I'm happy with where I'm at. And I never had a goal weight. The doctors had goal weights for me because everybody has to have a goal weight. I requested that they didn't tell me what the goal weight was because I didn't want to be obsessed by the scales. And it's a very dangerous slippery slope. All of the forums that I was on, everybody becomes so obsessed with the scales and the number on the scales. And I did not want that. And people become so disheartened if they don't reach their goal. So my goal was always when I went into the doctor's surgery, and it still is the same thing today, they said to me, because they have like all different people interview at the doctor's surgery because I think they've got to make sure that you're mentally okay to have weight loss surgery, that you're in the right mental place. And they said, why do you want to lose the weight and what's your goal weight? And I said, I want to lose the weight so that I can walk into any store at Pacific Fair and buy an outfit. And they said, what about your goal weight? I said, there is no goal weight. As long as I can fit into a dress at age, then I don't care what I weigh. At the end of the day, like, what does it matter if I'm 65, 55 or 75, if I'm happy? Like literally a number. If you didn't weigh yourself and have the scales for any kind of reference, you would have no idea what the number is. So you have to find a different way to be happy. And for me, it was about being able to feel more confident in my clothes, being able to wear trend clothes, being able to shop like everybody else when you walk into the fucking store and you don't have to go to Kmart or Target to get the larger sizes. That's what I wanted. And so I hit that pretty early on. You know, I think it was like 6 months in, I started to be able to shop at H&M and stuff. And now I'm, you know, I'm in like between a size 10 and a size 12, depending on the store. And so I fit into all those sizes fine now. So I really don't care about where my weight is anymore. It's actually so weird. Like when we were on holidays and I was in a bikini, in normal swimsuits, I was like, oh, you know, like I've still got a bit of a gut. And my friend was like, oh yeah, I'm just trying to like shed mine a little bit more. And I was like, I really don't even care. Like the fact that I'm in this swimsuit and the fact that I'm in these clothes, that's all it is for me now. You know, I'm just happy. I'm a lot healthier. My body's in a much better place. So I'm not going to hopefully die of any sort of heart disease now, diabetes, all those things that can be associated with obesity. So that's just what I'm happy about. I don't have my fatty liver problems anymore. And I can go into any store at Pacific Fair. I'm happy. So that's where mine is. So I didn't have a goal weight as such. Ashley, what is my favorite luxury brand? I'd probably say Louis Vuitton. That's where most of my stuff is from. Fashion-wise, I don't think you would call luxury. That's an Australian luxury brand, I guess. For clothing-wise, I think that they're probably my favorite. But like accessories, shoes, and bags and stuff would be Louis Vuitton or Balenciaga. Carly has asked, how would you describe your brand on your personal Insta? I probably should have read these questions before I like sat down to answer them. Hey, I guess, girl boss, informative, lighthearted, raw are the ways that I would describe my brand. That's all the things I try to do. I try to always keep in mind, like, one, is this information interesting? Is it informative? Will anybody get any value out of it? Or am I helping inspire someone? That's kind of what I try to do with my brand. Helen has asked, how do you balance rest and recovery in order to beat cancer and smash goals? Look, it's not easy because I like to always be working. I more rest physically, love to rest physically. I do my work from bed a lot on the weekends. And I find that when my body is resting physically, I can still do the mental stuff, which is really good. And I say no to a lot of social things. I tell people that I do dinners at 6:30 rather than at 7:30, 8 o'clock, because otherwise I get too tired. So it's just like these boundaries that I set up with my family and friends that like I can't do things every second Sunday because I have to rest. I have to have dinners early if you want to hang out with me. Don't ask me to go on the hike with you because I'm not going on a hike, you know, all those kinds of things. I just set up those boundaries and that's how I balance it. So I can still get my work done, but my body is still resting because I'm tired. Tia has asked, what motivates you? I don't know really. I guess I just want to be the best that I can be and I want our businesses to be successful and I want my staff to come to a job every single day that they are excited to come to and that they love. And I guess that's what motivates me. With my Instagram, what motivates me is that I want to be able to reach as many women as I can to help them with the messages that I've learned over the last few years, one, about sun safety, and two, about being confident in who you are. And I guess those are the things that motivate me that, every day when I'm like tired, it's like, nope, when I had bad days with the cancer, my staff motivated me because I'm like, no, I want to lead a team that doesn't have a boss that comes in and everyone's walking on eggshells around and they know is in a bad mood or, you know what I mean? Like I want my staff to feel like they can talk to me about anything, they can come to me about anything and they're all excited to be at work and motivated to do their job. So that in turn motivates me. All right, Molly has asked, what is it like working with your bestie? How do you give her constructive criticism and advice? I think you guys know by now I'm not forward, backwards and coming forwards, and Belinda knows that too. So Belinda's been my best friend since I was like 18 years old. We've worked together in 3 jobs before and I've been her boss in all of those jobs. So this is not new to her. And Belinda is my best friend. So she gets me. How I am as a boss is how I am as a person. I'm going to say it like it is. And so she understands that. She also knows my heart and where things come from and the place that things are coming from. So, you know, and Belinda is super cruisy. We have very different personalities. If she had the same personality as me, we would probably butt heads and I probably wouldn't work. But she's super cruisy. She gets where I'm coming from. So she likes constructive criticism because she's also like me in the way that she's always trying to improve and grow. And so, you know, we don't have any issues with that. I'm sure a lot of the shit that I say is hard for her to hear. And, you know, she's like, wow, bitch. But at the end of the day, she knows like I'm in a position where I have to give her the constructive feedback and then she takes it how it's intended. So you know, she's like, you know, that was hard to hear. Like, oh, Courtney's the worst. But then afterwards, I'm sure she's like, okay, but like, I need to like take it on board because it's coming from one, my boss, and like my friend who wouldn't say it to me unless it was coming from a good place. All right. I've got a question from, oh, this is like a mishmash of lots of their family names. I'll just go, how did you get interested in PR? I'm not going to lie. I deferred uni for some time to work in like a management role. And then I got like 300 people got made redundant from their jobs at that place that I worked. It was an American company and during the American issues years and years ago, like the, you know, early to mid 2000s, like the economy in America had a bit of a hard time. So a lot of their American businesses went under. So they had to lay a lot of people off over here as well. And they were made redundant. I realized that I kind of put off going to uni and deferred uni and like I couldn't do that because all I could be hired in was like sales and telemarketing leadership roles, and that's not really where I wanted to be for the rest of my life, so I needed to go back to university and get my skills. And so I knew that I wanted to do something in the way of marketing, and this is going to sound really bad, but I literally figured out what I had the most credits towards and then just finished that. And it ended up being communications. And then I just majored in PR and marketing because those were the things I was kind of interested in. As I said, that movie, What Women Want, has always been something that I really like. So it was advertising, but I knew I'd probably have to move to America if I really wanted to do something great in advertising. So I thought that like PR and marketing would just be, you know, more up my alley and then I could stay here. Kimmy, how do podcasts make revenue? We have ads in podcasts. There's no ads in this podcast, although last week I did have a La Roche-Posay podcast ad. But all the other ones that do make money, they just have ads in there where people will just say like, hey, go buy this product. Here's a discount code. And that's how you make money. So that brand pays to be featured on the podcast. We've got another question. How do you practice self-love? I'm struggling with this at the moment. I think for me, like I'm really lucky in that I'm single and I don't have any kids. So I can do what I want when I want most of the time. If I want to have a bath, I can have a bath. If I want quiet time, I've got quiet time at home all the time. You know, like if I want to just watch TV and not have anyone distract me, I can do that pretty easily. So self-care things are not hard for me to do, but it is sometimes hard for me to remember to put aside my work. That's more the thing that I struggle with, and I just have to be proactive with it. You just have to make the time and say, nope, I actively need to shut my brain down right now, so I'm not going to listen to any podcasts that are informative. And I did that last week. I was like, I'm putting on a true crime podcast. I'm not learning anything here. I was putting on a true crime podcast, and that was me doing self-care. At one point last week, I was feeling like a bit down, so I just like sat down and listened to songs that made me happy. Did that. You know, it's just about stopping, making the time, doing it there and then. That's kind of what I do. Next question comes from Ashley. What exactly is your role there? I think she means in my job. I own Spin & Co. I own the Spin Studio Network. I'm the creative director for James Cosmetics. And obviously, you know, Courtney Mangan Co., I own that. And my role at Spin & Co. is more overseeing. I don't do much PR anymore. In the early days I did, but now I just oversee the team, help with approvals, answering their questions, managing the staff. At the Spin Studio Network, I generate a lot of the ideas. I'm the producer of all of that, all of the content that comes out. I help look for new talent. I liaise with the talent, help organize, come up with ideas for organizing guests. Somebody else actually like locks in the guests. I help come up with the content that we're asking the guests, that kind of stuff. At James Cosmetics, I oversee the staff, make sure everybody's meeting their deadlines. I come up with photo shoot ideas. I will be on the photo shoot. I help run the social media accounts or oversee the social media accounts. I'm kind of like just the head wrangler and make sure that anything that Sam needs for pictures and things like that are all done. That, you know, I'm the one saying like, is that model booked in? What time's the makeup artist coming? Have we organized the lighting? What's happening with the photographer? Have we given him the brief? Like all, I'm just like overseeing all of those kinds of things. That's basically what I do. All right. Next question comes from Hazy. Has cancer treatment been financially impacting or is it covered by Medicare private healthcare? I've been really lucky and it has been covered by Medicare and Medibank. So a mixture of them both. I was advanced enough that the government has paid for this treatment that costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. There have been some drugs I've had to pay for myself. I have to pay my straight away at the start of every year $500 for my excess for my private healthcare to cover everything for me. But it costs a fortune. I literally get checked into a hospital every 2 weeks, and people know how like expensive a hospital stay is. Just the one night, I don't even stay the one night, but I get charged for the one night, and I go in there every 2 weeks for a full year. So that's a very expensive process as well. So I'm thankful I don't have to pay for any of that. The actual cancer treatment drugs are fully covered, so it hasn't really had any financial impact on me, I would say. So I'm so grateful to live in a country that offers that to me. Thank God. Polly is asking, will you plan another trip to Ireland? Love you and Sam. Oh my gosh, we definitely want to do that European trip, which was France, Italy, Ireland, England. It's just obviously on the back burner at the minute, but one day we will get over there, hopefully sooner rather than later. And the final question that I wanted to end on was actually one that was emailed in from someone anonymously. And that she said, it's silly and juvenile, but it's something I've always wanted to know for some reason. I want to be really nosy about your love life. I know it's not really important and you're probably going to keep it private, but you say a lot in your stories, I'm single. I was just wondering the following. Have you had a long-term boyfriend? Are you on dating apps? Do you want a partner in your life? Have you ever thought about how this would work if you want to have a partner? Not to be too open, but I know before I met my husband, my previous partners fed a lot of my insecurities, and for a long time I didn't want a partner to protect my self-esteem. That's definitely not what I'm doing. I haven't been in any bad relationships. All of them have ended just like a normal, like we're not in love anymore kind of vibe. I have been in long-term relationships. I've lived with a previous ex-boyfriend. I am on the dating apps in the way that I've downloaded them and I have a profile and I open them once a month. So on the dating apps is a loose term. I have been single for years and years. Do I want a partner in my life? Sure. I'd like to have someone. Do I need it? No. Am I desperate for it? No. Am I lonely? No. If it happens, it happens. That's why it hasn't, because I don't really go out of my way to do it. I want to try to make the dating apps try a little bit more effort with them this year because, like, you know, I guess it would be nice to have someone around. And it has been hard sometimes with the cancer. I go home and I've just had cancer treatment. I want to go to bed, but I have to get up and make myself dinner, you know, that kind of stuff. It's like it would be nice to have a partner to be able to discuss how I'm feeling with things, help me when I'm feeling shitty, you know, and like comfort you, all of that kind of stuff. Someone to do things with on the weekend rather than always having to be like to my friends, what are you up to? What are you up to? You know, I guess that would be nice, but it's not something that I need or like even really think about unless I'm being asked about it. Have you ever thought how this would look if you want a partner in your life? I mean, I'm very independent. Obviously, I've been alone for a really long time. So they would have to, I guess, understand my work life and that I don't switch off. I own a business, which is very different to, you know, working in a business. So they'd need to understand that. They'd need to understand that I do need my space. I don't know if I would, am I a high maintenance girlfriend? I'm not sure. I think in one respect, I would be like, you know, I have my own world. I have my own money. I have my own stuff. I don't need anybody. So someone can just slot in as someone like that I want. So I think that's very low maintenance. But then also I think I have very high expectations where it's like, I'm very happy with my life. So in order for someone to slot in, I'm not going to really make too many allowances for fuck boy behavior or like things that I don't like. I'm not going to be too accommodating to that, I guess. So in that way, I would be high maintenance because my standards are high in order for you to fit into my life. I'm just like not lonely. I don't know. It's like, I'm not the girl that sat down and thought about her dream wedding and all of that kind of stuff. So I don't really know. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not being private. I just have nothing to share. I did go on a date late last year. I wasn't into it, so it was just a one date thing. I pretty much just cut it off there. And there's just not really much to share. Like, I'm not being private about it at all. I just don't have anything to say. And I, you know, people ask for single girl advice. I don't have any advice. I just don't have any emotions towards it whatsoever. I haven't even really been around any guy that I'm interested in. I think that if I worked in a big workplace and there were lots of guys around, that's how I used to date. It used to be like people that I would work with and I had crushes on people and all that kind of stuff. It would be a lot harder. But the guys here are like my staff and not my vibe. So I would never, I don't have any of that. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, Sam, it's like this is my dad works here as well. You know what I mean? It's like, and then a lot of the staff that work here are like brothers of my friends and just like people that there's no romantic thing at all. And so I'm not like in that space in a work day. You know, when you go to work and the guy that you like is across the room and it's like, oh, you feel lonely because you can't get his attention or like he's not into you or you know what I mean? Like he has a girlfriend so you can't be together or whatever. I don't have any of that emotional baggage because I own the joint, you know, so I can't have that. And I don't come into contact with many other guys. Like I hang out with my friends and their partners, but all of their friends are also in relationships. So there's no opportunities for me there. If I want to meet a single guy, I have to like go out of my way into a bar to meet someone on these apps, you know, it's just not really my vibe at the minute. So yeah, not hiding anything. It's just, there's nothing to show. And that's why I don't do any episodes on it because I just don't think my experience is typical. And if you want a boyfriend and you are lonely, it doesn't matter what I say that's like empowered, independent woman stuff. I don't think I'll be able to change it because I don't understand where you're coming from and you don't understand where I'm coming from. I don't understand what it's like to feel lonely because I don't feel that. It's just an emotion that I have. I'm just so comfortable in my own space and time and just being with me. That's what I'm used to. I find it harder to have someone with me all the time. So, you know, I just don't kind of talk about that stuff because I don't really feel like I have anything of value to give. So there's an answer. Sorry, I don't think I have anything juicy for you there, unfortunately. All right, well, that is all for the Q&A. There were a few more, but I think we'll wrap it up there with my attitude of gratitude. Today, I'm so grateful because obviously it's the podcast, the live podcast, that the Spin & Co., the Spin Studio Network, it's only been going for just over a year, year and a half, and I'm just so lucky that I get to have a business that I'm passionate about. You know, I was obsessed with podcasting a few years ago and Sam was like, let's just start a podcasting network where, you know, you're so into that, you know a lot about it, let's do it. And I was like, all right. And I'm just so grateful that I have the privileges that I have and the abilities that I have and, you know, all the people around me that I have that I can start a business that is something just literally from what I'm being so passionate about. And now it's turning into a live show, like a live podcast with hundreds of people at the casino. Like it's so exciting. So I'm grateful for that today. And the thought of the week is just going to be one of my favorite quotes. And it comes from Cher. She said, my mum said to me, you should settle down and marry a rich man. And I said, mum, I am a rich man. And I feel like that leads itself into the single question. It's like, I don't need a man, so I'm just not out there searching for one. If one walks into me and a guy asks me out that I'm interested in, I'll go on the date. But other than that, that's just how it is. All right. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I'll be back next Tuesday with a new ep. But in the meantime, remember to set your standards high and protect the skin you're in. Follow me on Instagram at Courtney Mangan and at She Was The Fire. Subscribe and share. Bye.